welcome to our podcast about living on the Lewy Body Roller Coaster, a podcast for Lewy Body dementia patients and their families, presented by Lewy Body patients and their families.
Thank you all for joining us as we share firsthand the ups and downs and twists and turns of all things Lewy Body dementia, including our support, experiences, and friendship.
We're your hosts, Linda
and Curry.
I have a loved one with Lewy Body dementia.
And I am living with Lewy Body dementia.
So let's get started. Hello again, all of our podcast friends and family.
Hello, everyone. Hope you all are having a good week so far.
Okay, so we've gotten a lot of positive feedback from the last two episodes where we shared questions and responses from everyone from some Facebook groups. So we will definitely do more in the future. Sometimes if you don't look at Facebook for a day or so, you can miss a lot. So that's why we thought we would share some of the posts that provided really good discussions and some helpful hints on handling certain situations.
Yes, the last two episodes were full of good information and a lot of good sharing. In a few minutes, we're going to introduce you to another gentleman who has Lewy body dementia also.
Yeah, before we go any further, just a quick reminder for you to check out the episode notes to find out how you can support the podcast if you wish to do so. We have some shout-outs for this week for supporters. We listed them in the episode notes, as well as we will post them on our Facebook groups, the Lewy Body Roller Coaster Podcast's Facebook group and Curry's Our Journey with Lewy Body group. So thanks for everyone who's become a supporter thus far. We're so humbled and touched of all the positive comments and sharing, but most importantly, by the friendships we're making doing the podcast.
Yeah, let me introduce Mike Belleville to you. Mike and I first met, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, something like that, somewhere about that time. Anyway, we met in a Facebook group for called Dementia Mentors, I believe it was, and we're in another group together, and that we meet every Wednesday. But anyway, I asked Mike to come on this week because he's all over. He's been all through Lewy body. He's one of the biggest advocates that I've ever met. And I'm going to let him tell you your story. But anyway, welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you, Curry and Linda. It's an honor and pleasure to be here with you all today.
So, Mike, tell us about tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey so far with Lewy body.
Sure. First of all, I've been happily fortunate enough to still be married for in April will make 40 years to my beautiful wife, Cheryl. We have 3 children and 6 grandchildren, 5 living, 1 watching us from above, as we like to say, still part of the family. When I was 52 years old, 52 and a half-ish, I was initially diagnosed with younger onset Alzheimer's, and 3 years later, after seeing my 3rd neurologist up at Mass General Hospital in Boston, they changed the diagnosis to Lewy body dementia with Parkinsonism. So I've been on this journey now for just a little bit over 7 years, I've been blessed and fortunate enough to meet some really amazing, wonderful people and advocates, and who are people who are trying to change the narrative and the discussion for those of us who are living with any form of dementia. But obviously my heart is with those of us living with Lewy body. So it was great to meet Curry quite some time ago, and we had an immediate connection, especially when I told me he was a truck driver. And that was right about the time when my son, at the time he was 19 going on 20, said, "Dad, I want to be a truck driver." So that's what he's doing for a living, although he doesn't do long haul. He does all local. But he just, that's his passion. That's where he wants to be. So yeah, it was great. I'm real proud of him.
Yeah. It sounds like you went down the same kind of path as my husband, Jim, where first they said he had Alzheimer's, and then I think it was I can't remember now, maybe within a year or two it was changed. So how did you get from Alzheimer's to Lewy body? Is it something that you just because of the symptoms and then the doctor changed it, or is it, did you bring it up?
You're 100% right. And it wasn't because of, you know, that to say it was the doctor's fault. I mean, it's really, first of all, it's the most misdiagnosed form of dementia out there. And there's good reason for that, because it's just so, we can be so great one day and so down the next day. And that's why I love the name of your podcast, Roller Coaster, because that's exactly what it feels like being, you know, with this diagnosis. But what happened was we were in transition from the neurologist we had at Mass General was moving to California, and he recommended a good friend of his to ask if he would take me out as a patient, and we're, thank God he did. And it was meeting him the first one or two times where we were going through, let's start from the bottom, let's start from, you know, scratch, and let's see where everything is. And I honestly believe it's because we were telling him then symptoms of things that were happening that our first neurologist may not have been aware of, you know, specifically around the sleep related issues. And at the time I had not been diagnosed with, you know, REM behavior sleep disorder, as well as the Parkinsonism issues and the hallucinations. So it wasn't, I think it was based on all those things, you know, where he came up with a determination that he felt it was probably more Lewy body than anything else. And once we knew that, it just explained a lot more of what was happening and what we were seeing on a daily basis. And once I started, you know, I went to LBDA's website and started reading signs and symptoms, it was like, holy crap. You know, it was like reading a book about myself.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I've mentioned this on even the last time we recorded is, I remember when they told, I did all the research before we even went to the doctor waiting to get the, I think it was the PET scan results. And when he said, that Jim had Alzheimer's, it sounds terrible, but I was sorry. I was like, oh, thank goodness he doesn't have Lewy body, because I read all about the two. But we hear a lot of stories. Now, Kerry's totally different because he was fortunate to get a general practitioner to help diagnose him. And then I think you posted an article yesterday, or was there was an article you posted, Kerry. Was that from the Lewy Body Association, where it talked about more general practitioners seem to be diagnosing Lewy body?
Yes. You know, matter of fact, it said 85% of the diagnoses are not made by a neurologist. And out of those 85, I think it said 65% are made by general practitioners.
Hmm. That's interesting. Yeah, that's. I'm glad that they studied that. And I'm just hopeful. I think because it's the most misdiagnosed, and hoping that those that are in medical school now, like, they're putting more emphasis on it. That's what I hope and think that's happening. All right. So, Mike, I know you were part of the Dementia Action Alliance. I saw that you were part of that, and you said you still are. Can you share with us what that is and yeah, how you're involved and what you do with that?
Sure. Dementia Action Alliance has actually been around quite a long time. It's been around for over 20 years. It was started by two amazing ladies, one of whom was a former geriatrician, and another amazing couple who actually live in New Jersey. And because they saw a need of, you know, there's so much out there for people with dementia, you know, Alzheimer's, what have you, in the way of information and support groups. But there really wasn't a lot out there for showing that even though you have a diagnosis, you can still live a meaningful, purposeful life. And so that's what they were trying to get involved with, to help try to change the narrative. And it's gaining more and more popularity. The thing that's amazing about it is they do have a board of directors made up of stakeholders from people all over the industry. But there's also two people who are living with dementia who are on the board. I was on the board for a while. I stepped down. But there's still two people living with dementia who are on the board of directors, but they also have an advisory council. And the entire advisory council is made up of people living with dementia. The only other two people on the council are the two ladies who I mentioned earlier. And the thing that's unique about DAA is that nothing gets done without our input. We pretty much have the final say as to what types of programs and services and things that we want to do when it comes to just about anything. Including, you know, writing white papers, being engaged and involved on different committees and, you know, national committees. We have people who are, I wish I could name all the committees that everybody's on, but they're really connected and engaged with people.
Well, my question is, like, what service are they offering, the Dementia Action Alliance?
Well, first of all, they, like I said, if their main purpose is to show that you can still live a meaningful, purposeful life. Types of programs that they have are, you know, like I said, we have two different podcasts that we are, you know, that we put out. One's called This Dementia Life. Another one is called Professional Insights. We have different committees. I'm on the tech advisory committee. They have... gosh, I can't remember all the name of the different committees that are on, but they're all geared towards for people living with dementia who want to get engaged and who want to get involved in making have a better quality of life for themselves, but not just ourselves. It's about other people. And up to and including, like I said, being on national committees. I've been fortunate to be on a couple myself. They where decisions are being made about us, where we can have an input into public policy, as well as they have what's called on the mark sessions, where companies who are trying to come out, let's say, with an app or a product that's being designed for people living with dementia, they come to DAA and we give their input as to whether or not we think it's a good product or not, or how they can make the product better. And there's a very small stipend involved with that for people as well. Very small, but it's just, you know, thus, plus they also have, they're a resource for organizations that want to have someone go out and do a speaking engagement.
Do they have caregivers?
They do. They have started a caregiver group as well. Yeah. They've been trying to get one off the ground for quite some time.
Okay.
To get care partners involved and engaged in the whole process.
Yeah, because I think that's important because
absolutely.
We just started a girl, Jax Brown, and I started a Zoom spouses only. And I'm going to tell you, we've only met two or three times, but it's so therapeutic for me and for them to be able to share because they understand what I'm going through as a caregiver. So I'm going to be reaching out to them for sure, the dementia. So anybody listening, if you want to check out the Dementia Action Alliance.
Their website is daanow.org.
I'm going to write that down. daanow.org. Yeah. Okay.
And you'll see the podcast we have up there. They have a lot of different resources up there as well.
Mm-hmm.
For everyone and everyone.
Yeah.
And everyone, I should say.
Yeah. So if you're listening, you need to definitely check out that site. So Carrie, you want to talk about the next?
You bet. Mike, I know you were a guest speaker at a conference in Chicago, and your discussion topic was people with dementia and assistive technologies. You want to share with us some of those technology devices or programs you shared at that conference?
Absolutely. I was also blessed and still am, to be connected with another group called Dementia Alliance International, an amazing group. And again, this is another group that is made up completely of just people living with dementia. Everything they do is centered around our rights as an individual with a diagnosis, what our rights are. But again, just another group that does amazing advocacy work for trying to change the narrative for those of us living with dementia. And I was asked to be a panelist on the Alzheimer's Disease International Conference. Yeah, you know, I thought military was bad with acronyms. This is like crazy. I was joking with people. I was at an ADI conference on behalf of DAI, but also a member of DAA. It was like, all right, enough is enough. But anyways, it was a fantastic conference. And I was there on behalf of DAI to talk about how we believe technology can help and assist those of us living with dementia, live more independently, live in our homes for as long as possible, because that's, I believe, where most of us want to be to begin with, and using smart home technology in a way that can do that. And one of the ideas I had presented to them, or presented at that time, and this was done in collaboration with another wonderful lady, who I'm going to kick myself right now because I can't remember her name.
Well, when it comes to you, just shout it out.
Once I remember, I'll pop it out there. But it wasn't just me. It was her and I who came up with this, with the talk together, that I was just happened to be presenting. But one of the ideas that I've had for quite a while was, a lot of people wear smart watches, like I'm wearing an Apple Watch, and they have all these sensors built into them. One of my problems or challenges, one of my challenges is my anxiety can go crazy. Well, what if we had a way of wearing a smart, you know, watch device that could detect that anxiety, but not just detect it and tell me, hey, you're having a bad moment, but what if we could connect it to my smart home so that my smart home would be pre-configured in a way that would have a response to help me relax or calm down. For some people, it could be something as simple as turning on a Bluetooth speaker and playing a favorite playlist. For me, it would be playing a video of my wife. Or what if it could even send her a text message, because she still works full time. So it would send her a text message and she would know that I'm having a bad moment. She could call me and talk to me about it. So that was just one area, but there's so many other areas that I believe smart home technology can be incorporated.
So did you get that off the ground? Like that whole,
well, believe it or not, pre-COVID, I can't mention names because I signed a non-disclosure agreement, but I hopefully once COVID is gone, I was asked to be part of for this company who wants to help develop that product, specifically that, as well as to help develop more smart home technology in the home.
I know probably the newest, Apple Watch has a fall detection.
Yeah. So one previous to this model, and that's as soon as they did, I went out and got it because I have balance problems and I fall. But again, every year they're coming out with newer and newer types of sensors. Like now you can even do your own EKG, your own EEG.
Yeah, I saw that.
But ECG or whatever it is. You can even do your own pulse ox now.
It's crazy.
Just wearing a watch. I mean, they're going to, it's not going to be long. You're going to be able to take your own blood pressure with a watch.
Yeah. I did go out and get Jim one of those, but he just didn't wear it.
But there's a lot of other ways you can still incorporate that type of technology. Think about, the day before, and I remember this vividly, people say, you have dementia, you can't remember things. To heck with you. Of course we can. But I remember vividly the day before or the morning of, I went to do that talk in Chicago. I was reading a newspaper and they showed how in hospitals in the NICU for premature babies, where before they had all these wires and everything hooked up to them. Well, they had these sensors that were literally the size of your pinky fingernail that they could put on babies that would transmit everything that they needed to know what's going on with the baby health-wise, so that the baby didn't have any wires, anything attached to them, and that the mothers could just hold and cuddle the babies like any other baby that didn't have any problems. So the technology's there. It's just a matter of getting the right people together to build it and make it usable or design it in different ways that other people can take advantage of it.
Yeah, it's amazing what can be done now. And I was saying with the Apple Watch, the fall detection on it, you can program it so it would immediately, you could call 911 or it could call every, you know, we had it programmed to call me and my three children if needed. But Jim, for some reason, didn't use it. So it's on my daughter's wrist right now. I don't know, maybe it's, I know he's been having a lot of sensory issues lately. So it might have to do with that. So I'm going to jump Curry in here because before we started recording, Mike had said, first of all, I didn't know the new Apple Watch could help with anxiety because
it doesn't yet. That's my
goal. Oh, okay, okay. But the goal of it is, yeah.
That goal, and whether it's an Apple Watch or another device, right. Or well, even as simple as what looks like a Band-Aid that you stick on you that can, mm-hmm. That type of information.
Mike was also saying how, I think you said you were a little anxious because you moved. So we're thinking about, we're working on, because Jim's not working now and I just stopped working. So we're going through the downsizing route. How was that moving? I'm very concerned about that, about the moving part, especially for us because we're looking to move literally into another state, which you may have done also. But how was that for you? And do you have any advice for me or any other caregivers on how we could help our loved one who has Lewy body deal with a move? Because I'm anxious about it because I'm worried about how he's going to be.
I think that's you're being very smart and proactive and thinking that and feeling that way because it was incredibly stressful for me. And one of the things I tell people all the time is that you don't realize how much stress, whether consciously or subconsciously, is affecting those of us living with Lewy body, or again, any other form of dementia for that matter. It weighs on us, and if any, it really exacerbates our symptoms even more. And for me, I didn't even give it a second thought as to, we're just buying a house, we're moving, no big deal. But just the stress of going out to look for different houses, just the stress, because my family wanted to include me, of course, and I wanted to be part of the process. But, you know, what happened in our situation was, you know, our son found a house, and we all decided we're all going to move in together. This is the place we're living now, is our son's house. And we put our condo on the market. It sold in one day. But after a week after, we had the home inspection on a new house, and it fell through because of a bad inspection report. So we had to start the process all over again. But by then, we had already had a closing date on our condo. So we ended up having an overlap of 6 weeks of when we closed on our condo to when we were going to close on our new home. So that meant having to go find someplace else to live, which again, we were blessed and fortunate that my wife's sister had an apartment that we stayed in. But it meant going from someplace very familiar where I knew everything was to someplace completely strange, even though it was just a small 5-room apartment. to then having to move to a completely new house. And I got to tell you, the first month in this new house, I was in a very bad place. And I told Cheryl, it's as close as I've ever come to saying, I'm done, call them up, put me in a home, I can't do this anymore. I mean, because my stress and anxiety was that bad. So all that, there's so many little things that you don't even realize are going on, that I realized were going on that was contributing to all that anxiety and stress. One of the things was, once we got into this new home, my wife Cheryl, who's an amazing care partner, thought she was trying to do the best, or she not thought, she was trying to do the best she could. Just to give you a quick example, she set up the kitchen. Now, of course, it's not the same kitchen as I lived in before. But she tried to set up even the drawers so that the utensils were similar to where they were in the old house. And, but for me, and for most people with Lewy body, everything is, we're very visual. So no matter where she put them, it didn't matter. It wasn't going to make a difference. I kept opening drawers looking for things and couldn't find them, of course. So we had a talk about it one day, and she said, well, I tried to set it up the way it was for the old house. But what I explained to her was, if I keep opening one drawer expecting to find the utensils, instead of you telling me that, no, they're in this drawer, why don't we take the utensils out and put them in the drawer that I keep opening? Don't make me conform to the way you set up the house. You need to set up the house the way that I am going to be using it on a daily basis. And it's like a muscle memory thing. So that's what we're going to, you know, we're end up doing. So, you know, sticking labels on doors, trying to find things. Again, I'm very visual. It might be a sticker on the door saying, here's where the glasses are. But if I keep opening that door expecting to find the pots and pans, put the damn pots and pans in there, and put the glasses somewhere else. So, again, she was trying to do it in a good way, and she was trying to do it so that it didn't create much stress for me. But again, it's a learning process. Nobody's ever going to get this thing right the first time around.
So with that example, my anxiety is even more, because I'm very fearful, and I think I talked to you about this, Curry. For some reason, during COVID, the housing market is insane. And I said, if I put this house on the market and it sells in the weekend, I'm like, the thought of, if I don't have a house, we have to move some, exactly what you just explained, like that, I worry about that. But your example with the cabinets, so would your advice be to, like, for me is, or your wife, put things where you think they should go, but once we see our loved one doing what you were doing, like going to one specific cabinet, then we need to adjust and move things.
Yes, yeah, that's 100%. And as much as, and of course, everything is, everybody, I mean, this disease treats us all differently, right? I mean, I may not have the same signs and symptoms as your husband or as Curry does, or I may react to them differently. But the bottom line is, if we're still capable, we still want to be part of the process, right? We don't want to be left out of anything. But at the same time, you got to be careful not to include us in things that are going to cause too much stress. Okay, so I didn't go to the closing. Forget about that. I don't need to be there. Don't even include me in that. You know, did I want to go see the houses? Of course I did. I mean, I want to have some say so in it. And at the same time, I need to get a visual of where I'm going to be moving to. What's the neighborhood look like? You know, where's the bathroom? Where are the bedrooms? What's this room? What's that room? Even things as simple as the colors of the walls could be a huge factor, you know, because the way our depth perception works, you know, I'm walking into the corner of the wall all the time or stubbing my toes on things. So I understand there's a fine line and there's no perfect answer for everyone, So if I had to give advice, my advice would be, if your loved one is still cognizant and capable and wants to be part of the process, let them be as much as they can. But you don't have to talk about everything in front of them. So if there's, like, we ran into so many problems with the closing, I don't need to hear those things, right? I mean, the closing was this day, and now they wanted to push it out 2 weeks. And what do we want to do about this? And what do we want? Go in another room and talk about it amongst yourselves. You know, unless you know you have a concrete day for sure that says, here's the day we're going to move in, then I would include the person, you know, who has LBD in that part of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you go to all the houses, like to look at all the new houses, or did you just go to the one that thought would be good?
I went to look at, and we didn't have to look at, fortunately, we didn't have to look at too many. Part of the reason for that was because there weren't too many out there. Just like you said, the housing markets, it's insane. I mean, the house that we're in now got put up, I think, on a Wednesday night. We were the first ones in on Thursday. We had an offer in Thursday night, and they accepted our offer Friday. And they had multiple offers.
Did you just recently move?
We moved in August.
Of this year? Okay. I'm telling you, I'm following you in your family's footsteps, what we're doing. I've taken Jim with me once, but I knew what would happen the several days afterwards, which happened. Like, he just was down for like 2 or 3 days because we had a drive to Philadelphia from New Jersey. Where we went was an hour and a half away. And then we saw the place. And then he's an electrician. It was his trade. So he immediately goes to the electrical box. Like, he wants to see all the workings of the home. And to me, I'm like, as long as, you know, there's no wires hanging out. But he kept asking let me go see the basement, like, you know, this one house. I was very hesitant because I've seen several without him. And I figured, okay, this is like the third time we saw this one house, which we wound up not even choosing. But he was exhausted for 3 days afterwards. So, yeah, I'm walking that fine line of it's just me now making all the decisions pretty much. And that's a whole nother podcast with stress for caregivers. Because he always did, like, I have no doubt. I mean, I'm an educator. I have a couple masters under my belt and a doctorate. Like, I know I could do all this, but he just always took care of like the financial end, the 401k, the pension things. And now I have like everything coming at me at the same time, and I really can't ask him for any help because he can't follow a story or a question.
I was the same way. So, but I chose to be there, and I knew what it was going to do to me. But the other advice would be during the move itself, you know, get me out of the house, go take me to a friend's house, hopefully, if you can, you know, but slowly reintroduce me to where the new place is going to be.
That is such a great idea. I've woken up at night thinking about moving day because I'm going to be an emotional wreck because we built this house from, you know, we designed it and built it and the kids grew up here. And I worry about him, but that's a great idea, is to have him not here during the... Curry, how did you do? I know Curry moved. You just moved into your house within the last year or so, right?
No, we moved in. Linda called me up one day. She'd gone to town. And she called me up one day and she said, can we buy a house? And I said, if you feel like it. And she had found one. And I told her, I said, go ahead and put earnest money down. And I'll be home in a couple of weeks. And thank God, because I had just started having problems from the Louis at that point. So I didn't have to do any of that. She found it. She handled everything. I didn't have to do hardly anything.
But you two were pretty much living in the truck for a while, correct?
We had all our stuff in storage, and she arranged for everything to get moved out here, get put in the house and all that. I didn't have to do any of that. I was gone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Mike, just that, I always say every time we do this is, I know if I'm gaining something from it, someone else is. And I'm glad that before we started this, you talked about moving, because that has been a big stress for me, and worrying about Jim. And because I know even the smallest things, like if I get into a disagreement with my daughter, he'll be crying because I said, not yelling at her, but having a conversation that you knew I was mad. But, and then I'd look over and, you know, normally she'd be crying, and then I look over and he's crying, and I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. It's not easy because it's everyday life, right?
Yeah.
It's just your normal everyday life, but
you just don't know what
you need to stop and think of what that stress is doing to him.
Yeah. Yeah. And most times he'll go to bed. He'll go right up to bed. Like, well, it doesn't happen often, but the one time I can remember, she was really upset about something for school, and I was not happy with her or something, and he just went up to bed. And next time, and I, in my head, I'm like, okay, we have to make sure he's not around when this is happening. But yeah, it's just so much we can all learn from each other. That's why we, Kerry and I, decided to do this, even though we keep saying we really don't know what we're doing. Like Mike had to remind me today, don't forget you didn't hit record. And I was a little intimidated, Mike, after you said that you help edit like the podcast and the live ones. What did you call them? See, this is my dementia. I can't remember. What, video podcast? Yeah, there you go.
Video podcast.
I think I'm mentally blocking it because Kerry wants us to do that, and I'm like, oh, let's get through a couple of. It's just the meeting of the people. It's just been. I'm telling you, there's, and caregivers that are listening, there are times where this whole situation, I can't even imagine what you all are going through. But as a caregiver, there's some times where I never thought I was ever the kind of person would get depressed. But I get into funks that there was like 3 days there, 3 or 4 days, a couple weeks back, where I could not stop crying. And of course, I don't do it in front of Jim. So I'm like secretly crying. But if it wasn't for the people on these support groups that I've met, that just the other caregivers are right there with me, like, checking on me and just allowing me to give him a call. And that's, to me, that's why I wanted to do this is, well, first of all, it's because Kerry is so honest and shares how he's feeling. And to me, Jim keeps it in. So I learn what Jim must be going through from what Kerry posts. But selfishly for me now, it's really become a way where I can learn from everybody. And it's been great.
Hey, Mike.
Yes, sir.
You know, you and I were in a meeting before this podcast. And I don't know if you were in there when I talked about how I get confused between this house and the one we sold in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I can be sitting in my living room in my recliner, and I can't figure out which, if I'm in this house or our other one. My chair faces the same way in this one as it did in the other one, but the master bedroom's on the opposite end of the house in this one, blah, blah, blah. But I still have trouble distinguishing, figuring out which house I'm in. I have to literally think hard on it before I... You know, if I've got to get up, go to the bathroom or something, I've got to really think hard about which end of the house is the master bathroom on in this house. I have to, for some reason, I get it, this house and the old one confused all the time. And I can see maybe this conversation made me think, maybe because I wasn't involved in the move-in on this house and all that, that maybe that's why that's happening to me.
Hmm.
It's possible. I mean, I think part of it could be, too, is I know one of the things we talked about were, and I forgot who it was who mentioned it during that meeting, that our brains are going to naturally want to go to someplace where we're the most comfortable.
Right.
And if we're in a situation where anxiety or stress are making us, you know, like not in a good place, our brain is going to protect us in any way it can. So it's going to bring us back to a place that's the most comfortable. And it's very easy to get lost and confused, or what some people maybe call being in a fog moment, or just kind of staring in outer space. It could just be, you know, it's our brain bringing us back to a place that's comfortable to, you know, to help, you know, flight or fight or whatever it is they call that. So, I mean, there's so many times, you know, one of the things that we talked about during that meeting too, is there's times where and it happens more often when I'm waking up, although it does happen from even just walking around, where, and especially if I'm having a real vivid dream, I'm awake, I'm out of bed, I'm walking, but I'm still in the dream. My brain, my body thinks that I'm still in the dream. And it could take me anywhere from, I don't know, I can't tell you how long it lasts, a few seconds to a few minutes to, I don't know how long, until my body can just comprehend visually where I am is not where the dream says I am. You know, so that whole process could take a while, you know, to get comfortable again. And it could happen as easily as walking into another room. And especially not like, we've only been here a few months, but I can't tell you how many times I opened the front door expecting to see what our condo looked like. Open the front door, I'm expecting to see that. But I open the door and I see a completely different scene. And it's like, you know, you're startled. You're just like, where the heck am I? You know, so it's even simple little things. Not to say simple, not that they're simple, but it's things like that that, you know, people need to be aware of.
Yeah, I've been told that people have said, you know, can you stay in the house? Like, don't move them. But he built me my dream home. I have said before, like, I was a poor kid on food stamps, one of six kids in Philadelphia. And he came knight in shining armor and he built me this house, this huge, it's huge. and I just can't take care of it myself. And it's really just doesn't make sense to, our oldest lives in New Orleans, our middle one's leaving full time for the Marines in the middle of next month. And then our daughter's just finished school. So I don't, you know, I don't know if she's going to be coming with me, or even stay in the house, but it's just too much for me. So I am always, I'm toying with, should I move them? Should I not move them? But financially it makes no sense. Like, I have to hire people for every, you know, cutting the grass. I have to hire somebody to take care of the pool. And yeah, so it's just, what I want to do is, I told Carrie when we started this, I want to get a motorhome and travel around to people. Now that I have my tiny mini Mac, whatever this thing is called, I could put it in my pocket. But that's what I want to do. And then I'm like, well, is that going to be too much for him? Yeah, so it's a lot of yeah, big life decisions.
That was our dream as well, when, you know, we said when we retire, we're going to get a motorhome and such. But I mean, everybody's got to do what's right for their own living situation. And the bottom line is that you have to take care of you, Linda, I'm saying specifically, because if you're obviously, you know, that there's a lot of truth into, if you're not in the right good place, how are you going to take care of him? And to that end, I, you know, pre-COVID, you know, Cheryl has a girlfriend up in Maine, and they would try to meet two or three times a year, especially around their birthdays. Their birthdays are 2 weeks apart, same age and everything. And I would never question or qualm about it once, because I know she needs that respite. That's her way of her body rejuvenating, so to speak. And every care partner out there needs that respite. They need somebody they can talk to. They need somebody that they can just call and vent.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you that the support group, and for people listening, it's we posted on Curry's, the link to it on Curry's page and the Louie Body Roller Coaster podcast Facebook group. And we posted like a half hour before. And I am so thankful for that, Mike, because those women, and I never know, like, I'm totally fine now, but an hour before I even thought about starting figuring out the script and things today, I was like, I don't know if I can do this today. Like, the emotions just hit you and you don't even, like, I don't even know what happened to make it. But yeah, I agree. So if, for caregivers, reach out to someone. There's so many people that are walking the journey, like we're walking. And to me, I have really good friends, like best friends from high school that are still my best friends, but they live in Philadelphia. One of the reasons why I want to move back closer so that I can, if it comes time where I have to hire someone and I just need that break, I want to be able to drive 10 or 15 minutes to go have my meltdown with them and not, like, I can't do it now. I'm an hour and a half away. But I agree that you got to be able to reach out, because that really helps people. So as the last question I want to just throw out there, because I didn't realize, I know we always do this, Curry, we get talking, we're like, what? It's like 47 minutes. So what's one thing, Mike and Curry, this is for you too, what's one thing you would want others to know about people who have dementia, whether it's Lewy body dementia or any kind of dementia? What one thing you want to say to people?
Do you want me to go first or Curry?
Yep, you can go first.
Okay. It's a good question. The first thing I would tell anybody who's been recently diagnosed, or even someone who's been diagnosed for a year or two, because sometimes it can take that long for themselves to even accept that they have a diagnosis, is that you can still live a meaningful, purposeful life. There is not one doctor in the world right now that can tell you how long or how fast a progression of this disease is going to last. I know people, sadly, who have been taken in 5 years. And depending on how you look at it, it could have been a blessing for them, right? And at the same time, other people who have had this for 20 years. Nobody knows, like I said, how long that progression is going to last to where you get to the point where you have to maybe get some assistance, whether it's at home or in some type of care setting. So what are you going to do with your life between that point, between point A and point B? Hopefully it's that you can still be a part of something in whatever way that is meaningful to you. You can still have quality of life. You can still contribute to your family, your community, society in general, if you choose to, and that you still have a voice, and your voice deserves to be heard.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And Curry, I know you're going to jump on there and pretty much say the same thing, because I know you've said it before.
Yeah, that is Mike pretty much covered everything. But I agree with Mike. You have to let people know that we can still live a good life after diagnosis. We just live it differently now. You know, it's a little slower most times. We have interruptions now that we didn't have before. But we're not, when people hear the word dementia, they automatically, first thing they normally think of is they picture you bedridden, and that you can't even hardly talk, you just mumble, you know, and that you can't think on your own. And nine times out of 10, that's not the case.
It's true, because look at you. You're both doing podcasts.
Yeah. People nowadays are getting diagnosed earlier. And because of us getting diagnosed earlier, we're getting treatment earlier. And which gives us our body time to adjust to the medications better. So we tend to have a better journey along the way now than what a lot of folks used to have, you know, or than folks who have been misdiagnosed several times, you know, and finally years later get a Lewy body dementia diagnosis. But yeah, we're still people. We can still make decisions. We may be limited physically a lot of times, but we're still here. We're still people.
And we can still learn. I mean, there's exactly so many things I've learned to do since my diagnosis. I've learned to cook. I never cooked before, and I cook dinner nearly every single night. I mentioned the podcast we talked earlier before the show, you know, where I taught myself to do the video editing for two different podcasts. I've always been able to kind of draw, but I never painted before. And now I'm doing watercolor, acrylic painting, pencil drawings.
And the pencil drawing of the snowman that you did for your wife?
Yeah.
You are very good. You are very good.
I was going to bring up your artwork.
You need to
amaze me.
The one with the angel I just posted.
Yeah.
That's gorgeous.
Yeah, you need to post more of those for sure.
Thank you. But those are all things I've never did before.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I'm not just doing it. I mean, part of me is doing it to hopefully break the stigmas of what people think about when they hear dementia. But a lot of all that is therapeutic for myself because it helps with my anxiety and my stress. It helps calm me down. And I love doing them for people. Every single one of them is a gift for somebody that I give to them. But the point is that I'm trying to make with all this blah, blah, blah stuff, and I apologize.
It's okay.
I believe, and this is something I've been saying for quite a long time now, is the number one prescription doctor should be giving a person with a dementia diagnosis is social engagement. It is not a pill. And don't get me wrong. I'm not saying don't take your medication. But if a person is not socially engaged in some form, they're going to go downhill a hell of a lot faster than they were if they weren't engaged. And the engagement can take many forms, and whatever's meant, you know, whatever's meaningful to that particular person. If it's getting involved in a gardening club, a photography club, a technology, whatever it is, I don't care. You have to be doing something for yourself as a person with a diagnosis to stay engaged, to keep your brain moving.
Yep.
You bet. I agree with that.
I totally agree with that. All right, Kara, you want to start our ending here?
You betcha. Okay, folks, we hope you learned from what was shared this week from Mike, and we appreciate you coming on today, buddy. Please remember that we want all of you to have a part of our podcast series and share your thoughts on topics you want to hear about. We provide our email address below in the episode description, so please feel free to send us an email with topics you want to hear about or want us to explore. We would love to hear your feedback, so send comments and suggestions to either our email, which is lewybodyrollercoaster@gmail.com, or on my Facebook page, which is Our Journey with Lewy Body Dementia. And now we also have a Facebook page just for the podcast. It's the Lewy Body Roller Coaster Podcast Group.
I know. I got to keep remembering putting that on there on those notes for you. So we're going to always post the Patreon and the GoFundMe links should you want to support us that way. And if you have any questions on those, especially the GoFundMe one, don't send them to me, as I said last episode. Send them to Curry. Giving you some work there, Curry. But we can't thank you all enough for supporting us to keep this podcast going as we continue to share and learn from one another. So remember, we are doing this podcast for all of us, and we appreciate that you tune in each week.
Yes, and as always, we continue to post the link for the podcast each week for you in my Facebook group, Our Journey, and on the Louie Body Roller Coaster podcast group as well, as several other groups too. So thanks for joining us this week. And Mike, I do want to send a big thank you to you for coming on with us.
It's been great.
It's been a pleasure and an honor to be on here with you both, and I wish you continued success in your podcast. And I'll certainly be bringing it up to DAA so we can add your podcast to one of the resources on our website as well.
Thank you. That would be great.
We appreciate that.
Yeah, and check your email because we may be asking you to come back. Because I know there were other things we wanted to talk about, but I know sometimes we just start talking about other things. But anyway, so as Curry said, thanks for joining us. Until next week, this is Linda.
And Curry signing off.
We need to give a quick shout out to all the volunteers making this podcast possible. Curry and I knew nothing about how to do a podcast except that it was needed for all of us to share and learn from one another. So we dove in and made it happen. But this could not have been possible without thanking those who are helping us along the way, including our tech master, Ben Kaplan, our editing engineer, Andrew Sapola, Monica Gilbert of 789 Design for creating our Louie Body Roller Coaster logo, and of course, our spouses, Jim and Linda, for believing in us. So thank you to everyone.